Right. Hey, and we got Ryan Jimmo on the line, UFC light heavyweight fighter and owner of the fastest knockout in UFC history. How's your day going, man?
Not too bad, man. Just resting up my body and getting ready for a good day tomorrow.
Nice, nice. So you're in Florida now, training with the Black Zillions?
That's correct. Yeah, I came back down here in October, and I've been down here training hard since.
All right, cool. Yeah, I definitely want to get into you training with the Black Zillions and preparing for your fight next month. But I think sort of to lead up to that, our co-host Chris has a question about your karate background. Chris?
Hey, Ryan, man. Pleasure to have you on, buddy. I appreciate you taking your time out of your day. It means a lot to me and Jake and our fans as well, man. Appreciate it very much.
My pleasure, man.
Yeah, you got it. All right, so your karate background, I was actually listening to your MMA mental interview recently, and one thing that you brought up was how well that you did at karate, and I felt like I wanted to know more about that, just how you got started in it, and, you know, what kind of leagues you were in, and competition-wise, you know, what weight classes, etc. So can you kind of just walk us through your karate career?
Sure. I started doing karate kind of, you know, it was in my family. You know, my father competed in Japan several times. He placed 5th in Marcel karate in the world and 8th in another time when he went to Japan. So it was around me ever since I was a young boy, you know, ever since it's before I can kind of even remember, I guess. And so it's something I was I inherited, you know, I was born into. So I've been doing it kind of informally ever since I could walk, and kind of off and on between 6 and 10, I kind of, you know, want to stay home on Saturday mornings and watch cartoons instead of go to karate class. But then when I was 10, I decided I was going to stick with it, and I competed right when I started off, from when I was 10 right till I stopped doing it till I was about 23. I took home 4 national titles, and it was a heavyweight. For karate, 2 of those titles were juniors, and then 2 of them were in the senior class. I think my second year in the senior class, I won it, and I got a silver medal and a bronze medal at the Pan American Games, and I went to the Commonwealth Championships, and I got a tentative 5th. So I competed, So I competed quite a bit, and I mean, when I was training, right, I think right when I was like 18 or 19, that's when I started really getting kind of serious where, you know, it's like friends didn't come around me for 2 months, and I was completely – I right after I got out of school, you know, I think I had a job that, you know, I worked like twice a week, and then, you know, my parents kind of supported me. I was lucky to have a good situation, and all I did was like basically eat, sleep, train, you know. I'd get up in the morning, I'd train, and then I'd take a little nap, and then I'd train again in the evening, and my whole life centered around it for about 3 or 4 years. So.
Wow, man, that's pretty awesome. A couple other questions. I don't know if you answered this, you know, previously, but what style of karate were you a practitioner of? Hello?
Are you there, Ryan? Oh, it looks like he got knocked off. Let's ring him back right quick. You there?
Real sorry about that.
Not a problem.
Yeah. That's okay. Yeah, I didn't hear. Did you hear my question? I did not hear your answer.
Study?
What style of karate were you a practitioner of?
Yeah, I was in a style called Chitoru, Chito. And, it's a little different than what you probably saw with Lyoto Machida in his specials. He studies a Shotokan-based karate, then Machida-ru or whatever his father, kind of adapted from Shotokan karate, which it kind of has a lot of long stances, you know, a lot of very straight linear punches. And my style does too, but they're very linear moving. They go back and forth for a lot of hard. It's a very hard style. Mine's a little bit more of a soft style, a lot more sidestepping, a little bit not so deep stances and long stances, and we're a little more mobile and a more circular based.
I got you totally, man. I appreciate the input. Kyokushin karate, the one that GSP is famous for training, that's more of a aggressive, you know, kind of a kickboxing centric karate style. How does the style that you practiced under compare to Kyokushin?
I don't believe Kyokushin, they don't have any katas. It's all like they have like exercises to develop techniques, and then it's all sparring. So I think they're pretty close to a Shotokan based in their style, you know, and maybe even a little bit of a Goju-ryu. And if you don't know Goju-ryu, that means hard soft style. So, but they're probably more of a hard style, of a Shotokan based karate style. So a lot of hard blocks, hard punches. It doesn't have a soft side to it, you know.
Well, right on, man. And as far as your actual competing in karate, you seem to have a very, very deep background in it. You know, it was a good solid base for you, you know, as you were coming up and training. Now, when you say that you won all these medals and whatnot, when you were fighting, were you winning a lot by finishes or were you winning a lot by points? I know, I actually, to be honest, I don't know if you guys actually wear headgear while you're doing this stuff. I'm not too up on my competition karate knowledge, but I just kind of wanted to get a bigger... Oh, okay.
I think he dropped. Yeah, I think he dropped out again. He's back.
Yeah.
I'm back.
All right, he's back. Heyo. All right, so I just kind of wanted to see in your karate career if you were, you know, knocking fools out or were you winning by decision? Because I remember you said you scored like 100 and something points and you only had like 6 points scored against you. So I kind of just wanted to get a better idea of how that played out.
And I'm back.
Hey, yeah, dude, this is the beautiful thing about a pre-recorded interview. We can take all these chunks out and make it sound like there was no problems whatsoever.
Yeah, we weren't sweating bullets trying to stumble over each other.
Yeah, like we usually do.
I don't know if you heard the last question, man, but it was basically just walk us through your actual karate career on finishing ratio. I know you had a lot of points scored against opponents, so I just kind of wanted to get a better idea on how that played out.
Yeah, I didn't really keep track of my points until the last year I competed, and I thought it'd be neat if I go back and I watch the tapes of all my tournaments, and I think a head kick was 3 points, a takedown and a punch to the body was another 3 points, a body kick was 2 points, a foot sweep where they're off balance was 2 points, and a body punch to the head or a punch to the body of the head was 1 point, so. I scored, my last year competing, I scored 126 points, I believe, and I had 7 scored on me, I think.
That's incredible, man. I mean, that's outstanding.
Yeah.
Did you finish anyone in these competitions? Was it rare to get a finish, or was that something you saw?
These were point competitions, so if there is an 8-point spread in the score, then you won. Otherwise, there are 3-minute karate matches, and I finished a very good portion of my fights, yeah.
Right on, brother. Well, I'm going to pass the reins back to Jake. Thanks for the karate info.
No problem.
Yeah, the karate stuff's really cool. I noticed, you know, you've started relatively recently in mixed martial arts. You did karate for a while, and I believe your first professional fight was in 07, just, you know, about 6 years ago. What made you want to transition from karate over to mixed martial arts?
Well, you know, like, one of my idols is Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, and, you know, he took his sport to the very top, and then he became a movie star off of that. So I was looking at what I was doing, and you know, I had to work 40 hours a week just to kind of pay my bills to so I could compete, you know. So I looked at MMA, and there was more publicity, and it's something I could build my celebrity status, and I thought I have a bit of a gift and I have a talent here, so I might as well see how far I can take this, and then eventually, you know, kind of do what you know, someone who's my idol, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, did. You know, took his skill, you know, to a large world stage, the biggest one he could, and then he used that to kind of springboard into a movie career, and then obviously into politics and business after that.
Yeah, and obviously you've also made the transition pretty well. You're 17-1 so far and rocketing up the UFC 205-pound division. You know, we've asked a few fighters this, and I feel like every time we get a pretty intriguing story. So take us to the build-up and the night of your first fight, which I believe was at MFC 11.
That's right, with Adam Braidwood. That's when I lost. Jeez.
Were you know were you more nervous, more confident than you are now? Like how have things changed from your first fight, you know, to the way you mentally prepare and go through fights now in the UFC?
You know, I haven't really changed my method of preparation. Well, I have in a way. For when I was competing, I had a system that I followed, and it ensured that I won a lot. You know, it's like no going out on a certain night. You know, it's like, you know, if you have a significant other, they're basically getting ready for a fight with you. You know, they're not going out or eating bad food too. I have all these like weird little idiosyncrasies that I follow when in my preparations for my fight. So I had kind of a system that I always kept going, and something that I've been refining for a long time. So it's changed somewhat, but it's still basically the same thing. You stay focused on your goal. You cut out outside distractions as much as you possibly can. Sometimes life kind of barges in a little bit and you have to deal with things. But, you know, you just focus on your goal and you take away the distractions, and you know, you mentally prepare, make sure you put good fuel in your body, and you just have pinpoint laser-like focus on your goal, and it hasn't changed that much. Maybe a few of the details, like where I'm living, or maybe one or two of the foods I'm eating, or maybe one or two of the techniques I use to kind of focus my brain on is a little bit different, but essentially the system is the same. Just eat, sleep, and train, and have pinpoint laser-like focus.
Is it the same system you used back during your karate days?
Yep. The exact same system. You kind of cut yourself off from the world. You'd be a bit of a hermit. And, you know, you just focus in on the gym. You know, that becomes your life. And, you know, it's okay to give yourself little treats, like a little bit of junk food, or maybe go see a movie once in a while, but because you kind of need that a little bit. And but same systems.
So your entire MMA career has been at the light heavyweight division. What weight did you fight at back in your karate days?
I was about 215 pounds. My first five fights were in heavyweight for MMA. And then so that was a heavyweight division in karate when I was at 215 pounds. So that was about where I was. Sometimes a little bit lighter, give or take 10 pounds either way. But yeah, I was always pretty big guy, so I was always about well over 200 pounds usually.
Definitely, yeah. You know, it's kind of crazy. You and Henan Barao have very similar records. You know, you're both on crazy streaks, and you have one loss in your career, which just happens to be the first loss. You know, it's kind of cool seeing a guy just get spurned by that and going on a crazy streak. I'll bring you to what was probably a better night for you this past July 21st at UFC 149 when you knocked out Anthony Perosh in 7 seconds. Which for me, you know, all of the really quick knockouts, you have Duffy, Ludwig, you and Chan Sung Jung. What I like about yours the most, you all actually touched gloves and you still knocked him out in 7 seconds. Take us through that fight, and then take us through the whirlwind after. I'm sure everyone wanted to talk to you about that.
Yeah, I was a popular guy after that. So, you know, it was, I had to kind of like just kind of square myself off for a couple of days and kind of deal with the media. I had my family there for that fight, so they were patient enough to, you know, realize I had a little bit of business to take care of. And so that was a blessing, and they took some of the stress off me. So afterwards, it was a bit of a whirlwind, but I had a good support crew to make sure that I get it done. And, you know, during that fight, I've been waiting for that night for so long. You know, I competed in other leagues and kind of toiled and worked my craft for so long and tried to, you know, I polished my diamond for so long, you know, and I've been waiting and waiting for that. And, geez, when the opportunity was there, I knew I was going to, you know, I knew I was going to grab it with both hands. And I just remember looking across from in the cage, and I just remember thinking, like, Anthony Perosh, you are in big trouble right now, and you don't even realize it yet.
And then I went at him, and I didn't expect it, obviously, the first punch to knock him out. I knew I was going to connect, and I knew I was going to have come back on the upper hand with if I was going to throw some heavy leather. But, you know, it happened to land real flush, and I guess the rest is history.
Definitely, sure, yeah, that was a very, very exciting moment, probably just the moment on... probably the premier moment on UFC 149. I think I saw you on SportsCenter too. So for an MMA fighter to make it on SportsCenter, that's definitely a feat. Recently, you started training with the Blackzillions down in Boca Raton. Was this before or after the Parrish fight?
This was before. I went down there in March.
And, okay.
So I to get out of these wonderful Canadian winners, you know. So I went down there at the end of the Canadian winter, and you know, I don't know if I'll be back in Canada too often during the winter time, but it was good training down here. World class guys. I had to go in training, and I had to be competitive every single day. You know, it's not saying, well, I can take it easy today because, you know, this guy's like the, you know, like sometimes the talent base wasn't at my other places I was training at, so I had to elevate my game and elevate my focus even further when I was here. And I mean, my that camp went pretty good, and this camp is even better. I mean, I found, you know, of the teammates I like to click with, like very much so, like with Alistair Overeem and Deion Staring, and you know, a lot of the other guys that I train with here. I mean, we kind of, you know, you always find the people that you like to train with and that you work well with. So I mean, I just have a better situation down here now that I've been here longer, and things are just clicking even better.
Yeah, I really can't see a way how that would be negative for you. I just want to say, first off, that going down to the Blackzillions is probably upping your game quite a bit. Yeah, I mean, you just brought up some valid points there of the coaching staff, the training partners. I wanted to ask you something. On MMA Mental, you brought up the fact that sparring with Alistair Overeem is an experience. To be honest with you, man, Alistair Overeem is my favorite fighter of all time. I mean, his accolades are incredible. He's a beast. I wanted to get an inside view, you know, from you, what it's like to spar with Alistair Overeem, because that guy is a monster. I mean, he's in a different weight class than you. He's got those crazy K1 credentials. So just kind of walk us through a sparring session with Alistair without giving away any secrets, obviously. I just want to know what that's like.
That's no problem. I had a little bit of a ribbage injury, just a minor one, a couple weeks back. And on certain days, we spar with small MMA gloves, you know, like not the very smallest ones, but, you know, those kind of medium-sized ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot to bring my shin guards, and I said, Alistair, I'm not kicking. He's like, okay, well, I won't kick either. And I said, and I can't get hit to the body, so he's like, so we're just going to, like, punch to the head. And I realized I was bad at negotiating things when I just negotiated myself into like a 5-minute sparring session with Alistair Overeem, where we're just going to punch each other in the head. You know, I knew, I'm like, I should not go into politics. I should not be doing business because I'm horrible at this. But, you know, Alistair's a good training partner. He's he doesn't even realize how big and strong and fast he is. So it is an experience. Every time it's like, oh, geez, I got to spar with Alistair. This is going to be a trip, man. But after you spar with Alistair, you go and you spar with someone else, and they hit like girls. That's what I think of when I spar. Like, when I spar with other like light heavyweights and stuff, and even in the camp, even like world class guys, I'm like, when they hit me, I'm like, oh, this guy kind of hits like a sissy, you know? So it makes you tougher, and I mean, I only try to push myself, so I'm a little bit more fleet-footed than Alistair, so if I move around, I do a little better, but I like to stand right in front of him and try to throw with him a little bit, and I get hit a lot. I lose a few brain cells, but it makes you tougher, and anyone else that's standing in front of you, you can look at the person that's standing in front of you and go, I'm not afraid of you at all, because I basically stood in front of the biggest, strongest K1 fighter in the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and also you're talking about how everyone else is sissies after sparring with them, but you're probably peeing a little bit of blood. A little bit of blood is coming out in your pee.
At times, he's got a pretty good knee to the body.
I can only imagine how that feels. You know, talking about you know, Alistair Overeem. It's kind of a two-part question. First off, I wanted to get your thoughts on rankings, because recently Dana White announced that the winner of Big Nog versus Fabricio Werdum is going to face off against Kane. I think that's really just giving Alistair Overeem the shaft, because I think he deserves that title shot if he gets past Bigfoot. How do you feel about that, man? How do you feel about, you know, a guy who, you know, Alistair Overeem beat Fabricio Werdum 2 years ago and is on a kind of a similar trajectory? And the second part of that question is, what is with this ranking system? Like, there's no clear-cut way to the title. So, you know, to kind of sum that up, do you think that Alistair deserves that title over Fabricio? And number two, how do you feel about the current UFC rankings to get to that title?
Okay, so I'm going to answer the second one first, if you don't mind.
Sure, not at all.
I think because, you know, the UFC, they kind of monopolize. They have the market monopolized. You know, the biggest game in town, and they can kind of call the shots. It's not like the NFL or the NHL, where they have a lot of corporate shareholders and everything is really regulated now, where they have specific rankings and this guy's in this spot and this guy automatically gets to go to the playoffs because, you know, this is a business that Dana White and the two brothers are they're trying to make money. It's a business, so they're gonna do whatever sells, and so it's not I don't think evolved into that type of a sport yet. It will, I think, in the future, but it, overall, the sport has not quite evolved into that. You know, it's just not that time. It hasn't grown into that yet. I think eventually it will. I think maybe football and baseball and other sports that, you know, are 100 years old, you know, were probably very similar when they're only 20 years old. So it's just going to take a little time, a little maturity. Now, the second question, should Alistair get the title shot? Since he's my training partner, I think the guy is probably the best heavyweight in the world. You know, he's an animal.
I agree.
If I looked at it from maybe because he hits me, maybe that's what I think that. But on the other side of the coin, you know, he just got back from a bit of a layoff. So I think it's okay that the UFC are building him up with another fight and then, you know, build a little more suspense in there, because it's a little bit like a soap opera, you know what I mean? Like, just to sell fights, they have to build up some drama and this sort of thing. So I think it's probably appropriate, you know, in the bigger scheme of things. But I would like to see Alistair get a title shot, and I think he wins it when he gets it.
Yeah, you know, things like Alistair Overeem getting the title shot, that definitely makes a lot of sense. But then you have, you know, things like Chael Sonnen getting the next shot at light heavyweight. We actually had Michael Schiavello on a few weeks back, and he was going berserk, you know, going on a rampage. It's not about rankings, it's about ratings. Just, you know, going really, really mad about the UFC brass. You know, it is the division you fight in. What do you think about Sonnen getting a title shot after a loss at middleweight?
Again, I think the first part of the question I answered, I think I kind of answered it, where this is a business. These are private business owners, you know, who want to see their brand become as successful as possible. So by putting Chael Sonnen and John Jones on TV, people are going to tune into that. I know I am. I sometimes, hey, if you're, I know you've probably done this, you probably go on YouTube and put in Chael Sonnen and just watch him like rant for like 10 minutes.
Yep. And
everyone's done it. I love the guy. I love watching him, man. Like, I think he's hilarious. Does he deserve the title shot? No, but again, this is a private business that that they're running, and if they think that's best for the business model that they have set out, then that's their decision to make. Is it right within a sporting kind of seeding ranking thing? No, obviously not. But again, I don't think we're playing on that field, right?
Yeah. So you know, it's definitely a business, but it's a business you've got stake in. Is it something that makes you upset, or is it just something you kind of accept as a you know, way of life with mixed martial arts at the current moment?
Yeah, well, so I'm a bit of a realist, and you know, my buddy My friend Ryan Saunders, he's actually the guy that got me into MMA. He said one time, he's like, you know what? You can sit there and complain about how the 1% rules the rest of the world, or you can try to become rich yourself. You know what I mean? So, I mean, we can sit here and complain that the colorful killer characters and the crazy people are getting all the nice fights, or you can become a little colorful and crazy yourself. And I'm pretty colorful. I do the robot, do the splits, and I got some other things that I might want to do in the future as well. So I'm okay with it.
Absolutely, man. You sound like a consummate martial artist, not just a mixed martial artist, a guy who's kind of dedicated his entire life to the thing. And that's worth looking up to. And on that same note, I always find myself watching these fights, obviously legally purchasing the pay-per-view, and seeing you guys not only go through the pre-fight, getting your hands wrapped, but Burt Watson yelling at you. You're walking out of those cage doors to, beyond thousands of screaming fans. Your walk-up, you're eyeing your opponent, and you step into that cage, and the pageantry and the intensity of it is something that always excites me. I don't follow any other sports, just combat sports. How does that feel, man, when you're standing there on the other side of the cage looking at your opponent and you just feel that crowd just calling your name? You must feel like a Colosseum fighter from ancient Roman days. That's got to be something. Can you tell us what that's like?
Yeah, you do. You know the best way I can describe it, that when you're fighting, have you ever seen the first Spider-Man movie?
Of course.
Yeah. You know when he gets in a fight with that bully that he's always afraid of, and he guy throws a punch and then everything slows down and he looks at the guy and looks at the fist and then it speeds all back up. It's kind of like that. Sometimes you're fighting and sometimes things are going in slow motion. You hear people talking in the crowd. It's almost like a surreal experience. And then sometimes it goes blistering fast. So it's but the build up sucks. You know, the build up sucks because you have to hold in all this energy and it's important to put it out in the appropriate amounts once you get in there. So it's a bit of a calculated push of your own internal personal energy.
I feel you, man. The anxiety must be at some crazy levels. You know, a lot of people don't know how to deal with that kind of angst, but it seems like all of you fighters out there, I mean, there is no way out. You guys have to do it. You've spent months of your life training leading up to it. You have family and friends, on your shoulder looking after you. So it's kind of an admirable thing to go out there and put it all on the line. And I think that's why I respect you and anyone who gets in the cage.
Well, thank you, man. All right.
Your next fight is in, I guess, a month and 10 days at UFC on Fuel 7. You're fighting James Tehuna. Yes. Kind of take us back to that Black Zillions camp and walk us through how you've been preparing for this fight over in England.
You know what? Just finding the right training partners, putting your schedule together, and then, following out the plan that they put in front of you. I take pride in being a pretty well-rounded guy, so I try to give equal attention to all my skills and make sure that I have the best of. I mean, down here in this camp, I mean, there's best of all worlds. You know, if I want to kickbox or I want to do a stand-up, they have the best in the world here. If I want to do jiu-jitsu, I have Mario Sparrow teaching jiu-jitsu. If I want to do wrestling, there's Rashad Evans, there's Anthony Johnson, there's good wrestlers here, there's Scott Bear, it's like there's just great wrestlers here. So I mean, I just have basically the world, the best in the world of MMA at my fingertips. So I just go in and I try to master each skill to the best of my ability. And that's it. Put in a ton of effort. Be smart and intelligent with my training, with my nutrition, with my rest, with my life balance, and just make the most out of it.
Yeah, there are a whole ton of superstars there, a whole ton of guys coming up like yourself in the Black Zillions. Speaking of the camp, I sort of wanted to know, is there anyone in the Black Zillion camp you feels kind of flying under the radar now that no one's really talking much about, but he's an absolute beast in the gym?
There's a guy. He's not in the gym right now. There's a whole slew of guys. One guy that he's a strike force fighter named Guto Innocente. Very good stand up on this guy. You give him a couple of years, and he's only young too. I think he's only 25, so give this guy a couple of years, and he could really be some another young guy that's training quite hard. And I'm talking about a 19-year-old young. In 5 years, he'll be a force to be reckoned with for sure, like a definite force. But right now, he's pretty damn impressive as well. As a kid named Luke Jackson, and he's only 19, and he's gonna have a bright future in the sport.
Definitely. I want to switch back to a question about you. You know, your last fight, I think just as many people were a fan of the knockout as they were a fan of the robot dance after, which I jumped up and started cheering because the robot was like the only dance I would really bust out at those cheesy high school proms, whatever. The robot's awesome. I love seeing someone bust it out. You know, I didn't really see any of your fights at MFC, but is the robot something you've been doing a while? And if so, you know, where did all of it come from? And I guess will we be seeing more of it in the future?
You'll certainly be seeing more of it in the future. I did do that for MFC fights, and that one that you saw, I was just really excited. So it was actually a really bad robot. If you go on YouTube, there's a lot better videos of me doing the robot that, you know, like people that actually do it are like, wow, you're very impressive at that. So that wasn't a very good robot. But where it started from is my friend and I. You know, I always wanted attention when I was younger, as a teenager. And my brother used to break dance, and he taught me a little bit when I was a kid. And my buddy and I said, hey, I saw these break dancers on TV one day. I said, I taped it and said, hey, why don't we try to learn this? So we started teaching ourselves how to break dance. And we'd go to school dances, and we'd have battles with other guys. And, you know, so it's just something I kind of kept doing and doing. Kind of for a while there, I didn't do it in public, or no one knew I could do it for a couple of years there. But I was always still practicing at home in the mirror, you know, just for you know, a little bit of fun. And, you know, now it's something, I guess, that, you know, serves me well.
Definitely. So would you be willing to say that Ryan Jimmo is the best dancer in the UFC?
Yes. In fact, I will go on a limb here and say for doing a pure robot dance, not the one that I did just after my fight, because I was just kind of screwing around right there. But I will challenge. I'm probably in the top 30 in the world for doing that. I'm going to go on a limb and say, there's maybe 30 people in the world that might be better at me than doing the robot. And
top 30.
Change that.
Powerful. Powerful, yeah. Ryan Jimmo. You know, you are good at that. I've actually seen your post-MFC robot dances, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say that there's one other fighter in the UFC active right now, someone you know very well. I think that the one guy that can give you a run for your money is Rashad Evans with the stanky leg.
We've had little contests here in the camp, so yeah, maybe that'd be funny. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'd love to see you, you know, challenge someone to a robot dance off, but you know, just thinking about where you're going, you know, currently with your career. We talked about rankings, we brought up your past. James Tahuna, the man in front of you, we talked about your training. How do you feel about that guy as an opponent? Because I think he's a hard fight for anyone at 205. And I'll tell you what, man, I'll be rooting for you on fight night. But how do you see this fight playing out? I know you're not the kind of guy to make predictions. You're a nice level guy. But, I mean, you know, kind of walk us through that. You have an opponent in front of you. He's a hard-nosed dude.
Yeah, I think James Tahuna is a very hard-hitting guy. He's got some heavy hands. And he could knock out or TKO anyone. If he catches anyone real flush on the chin, he can do some damage to them. So I think that's his biggest asset. So you know, I'm tailor making my game plan around his strengths, and I think he's a hard fight as well. I believe he's Māori. He's from New Zealand, and I've been down in New Zealand before, and those people are pretty big, strong people. I was driving up the road when I was down there, and I saw this. A lot of the guys have long hair, you know? So I see this construction worker, he's like using a jackhammer. You know, I'm like, man, look at the size of that guy. That guy is, oh my God, that's a woman. That's a woman. Oh my God. So like, they're like a big, strong people. So I know he's going to become with some intensity, man.
How big of a beard did she have?
It was, she looked like Santa Claus with dark hair. No, I'm just kidding. No. That's beautiful. No, but they're big, strong people. So, you know, I'm expecting some fireworks and some intensity from them for sure.
Yeah, have you been doing anything special to train for them, or has it just been, you know, the daily go in and pick up a new skill every day over there in Boca Raton?
Yeah, with the amount of skill level here, I just basically, you know, at this point, I mean, it's going to start to tailor down into like more specifics for me. But in this point, it's just like there's so much skill and talent here. It's just build your skills and build your talents while you're here, and then just be at an elevated level so that when you fight anyone, you're just above them wherever they want to go. We're doing pretty good, though. That was good, wasn't it?
yeah, and that's what's beautiful about the pre-recorded interview. We can just clip all of this out, but yeah, I guess let's get back to it. We only have a few more questions, and we'll let you go. You know, I really like following you on Twitter because you've usually got a opinion about MMA. You're usually watching the fights, tweeting about the fight. So obviously, you're a fan. And sort of a debate I've seen more talked about recently is Daniel Cormier moving down to fight Jon Jones. Yeah, a lot of people think Cormier is going to be a real threat for Jon Jones. What do you think about this hypothetical Jones-Cormier match? You think Cormier's got the tools to beat the champion, I guess?
You know, he's got a good wrestling base, and I think he's got pretty heavy hands. You know, it's going to be hard to say how he's going to handle that that weight cut and how he's going to handle fighting that level of competition. You know, my teammate's actually fighting him next week, so no one's invincible, you know. So I think people are putting the horse before the cart here, or the cart before the horse. You know, I think in the fight game, it's not never a smart idea to kind of think ahead too much, you know, like, oh, after I get past this guy, it's good, you know. No, you got to pay attention to this guy. We're all professionals here, and you better make sure you win the fight that's right in front of you. But I think Daniel Cormier is a talented guy, and, you know, in the appropriate amount of time, I think, you know, if he makes it through the ranks, it's hard to say how he'll do.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about Cormier because I know you're training with Deion Staring. Is there anything special he's been doing in training to get ready for Daniel Cormier? Obviously, you know, not to give away any of his secrets, or is it sort of just the same mentality as you as far as going in there and trying to get better slowly at everything?
Yeah, well, you know, Deion has a game plan that he's going to try to, you know, put in play, and I think it's pretty good. It's a pretty good game plan. So, you know, he's been training very hard. It's the best camp he's ever had. So, and the guy's a machine. I mean, he can he doesn't stop. Like, he is a machine. I mean, he grinds and he pushes and he breaks guys, you know, because he has a very high rate of output. So, it should be a good fight. I'm looking forward to seeing Deion fight.
For sure, yes. Yeah, so I can't think of anything else MMA related. Chris, you have any more questions for him?
I do. I have one. The most important question of all.
The question we ask.
Yeah, Ryan, Mr. Ryan Jimmo. Yes. We ask everyone this exact question, and I'll tell you what. Chris Lieben is bubblegum. John Anik is lactose intolerant. You know, Charlie Brenneman is vanilla. What is Ryan Jimmo's favorite ice cream flavor? You can tell a lot about a guy about, you know, what kind of flavor that they like to eat when it comes to ice cream. Tell us.
Oh, geez, that's a pretty, I mean, that's a complex question. Depends on that, if it's that time of the month for me or something, you know. I got to think about this. I always liked Neapolitan when I was a kid. But sometimes I like just chocolate. I do love strawberry. But like Rolo ice cream's awesome. Oh, you know what's really good? Okay, score ice cream. But not the new kind that they came out with, which is like vanilla with a little score bite. No, like chocolate with great big chunks of toffee in it. That's a shit, you know what I mean?
What is this score ice cream you're speaking of? I live in California. What is this?
Oh, like, you know, a score bar, you know, it's like a thin little kind of toffee wafer, kind of chocolate-covered goodness, you know what I'm saying? You
ever, never heard of it. No, never heard of it.
Okay. All right, maybe it's a Canadian.
I'm in Florida. I think I've seen it. It definitely sounds familiar.
Yeah, I don't know. I've got to check see if they actually have it down here in Florida. So I'm in Florida as well. So I'll have to check it out. But that's probably my my favorite. So it might be a Canadian thing.
Yeah, definitely. No, you said you wanted to, you know, or we could ask about stuff other than MMA. Yes. Okay. Yeah, dude, let's tap into your mind, you know, sort of outside of fighting and training and following MMA. What sort of stuff are you into usually?
Well, I really like science. I do like politics, so that's why I brought those up. So these are the sort of things that I'm into. I like chess a lot. I like these sort of things. I love Freemasonry. I love that stuff. So, yes.
What do you think you would have been if you weren't a professional fighter?
A scientist or maybe an actor. I'm not sure. So, but I still plan on kind of making good on both of those. Maybe a race car driver, you know? Something like that.
Dude, I got a question for you. You're talking about acting a lot. I myself am a film buff. I love film. What director would you love to work with, and what kind of genre would you like to act in?
I think originally, to get my feet wet, I would like some action, so because I'm a pretty physical guy. But I like sci-fi. I like fantasy a little bit, stuff like this. I really like sci-fi. I'm big like science geek, so I like sci-fi. Actually, you know what I want to be on, and I'm gonna try to make it happen. I want to be on The Big Bang Theory as a guest.
Just muscled up geek. I could see it.
Yes, and maybe I could, like, you know, work together with Dr. Sheldon Cooper and say Bazinga. That would be like my ultimate. I could like die the next day and I'd be completely okay with how the life I lived if I could
teach
him
how to curl properly with 30-pound dumbbells or do kettlebells.
Yeah, well, I guess if we don't have anything else, dude, thank you so much for coming on. Really enjoyed your time, and we're definitely going to be rooting for you next month at UFC on Fuel 7.
Thanks a lot, guys. It was great talking to you.
You have any shout-outs or plugs you want to shout-out before we let you go?
I do want to shout-out to a new company I just teamed up with, Fox Rent-A-Car. They look like they're going to be a great supporter for my future and in my career. I want to say thank you to my team, Black Zillions, all the guys I train with, my mom and dad. I love you, mom, and
Jesus.
My girlfriend as well. And no, well, not Jesus, Buddha, maybe. Buddha. My girlfriend, hi, how you doing? If I didn't include her in there, she'd get pretty mad. So, there you go.
You have any dogs or cats you want to shout out? We had Tom Lawler on a few months back, and he definitely wanted to shout out General Whiskerton. I forget what he named his
cat. It was actually Mr. Waffles. Close.
Mr. Waffles.
I'd like to say a shout out to my invisible friend that I talk to all the time. That's it.
Well, dude, thank you so much for coming on. Follow him on Twitter. It's Ryan Jimmo, RyanJimmo, one word. And yeah, really good luck in your fight next month. And maybe, you know, a few months down the road, we can have you back on someday, man.
Hey, great, man. Thank you very much, guys, for having me. It's been great.
All right, thanks a lot.
Have a good day, man.